So, I'd like to begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee for Glen Allen School District 41, today, April 9th at 6 p.m. here at Central Services Offices. Would you take a moment, please review the minutes from the March 8th and March 12th, 2012 Board Finance Committee meetings. Minutes.
Two sets of minutes.
Comments? Everybody okay? All right. First order of business then will be the Hadley Junior High School yearbook printing recommendation. If you remember, a few weeks ago we brought you a recommendation. Well, during our initial meeting with the proposed vendor at that time, they mentioned during the meeting, not mentioned, they told me in no uncertain terms during the meeting, that they misread and misunderstood the bid directions that were provided when we went out to bid originally. They therefore withdrew their bid. At that time, we went out to bid again, and now people have sort of jumped spots, and Justin, who is the incumbent yearbook printer, has now dropped their price, I believe, by about $2 a copy. So they're now the low bidder at $12.80 per yearbook, which results in a savings of about $1,800 for the district. As you know, this is a pass-through expense anyways. So we, as I stated earlier, we went out to bid again. Justin's now won the bid, and they are the low at $12.80 per copy.
It's interesting that they increased their price.
Well, they decreased their price.
Decreased.
And they decreased substantially, and the thing was, this guy really kind of gave me a hard time when he was not the original, shall we say, winner, successful bidder. He was kind of difficult to work with. So I hate to say that he came to his senses, but he did drop his price substantially. So we'd like to move this recommendation forward. We'll be taking it to the Board of Education, and then on to, well, the Board of Education for discussion at April 23rd, and then for action at the 14th meeting. So do we have your support on that, then?
Do we know when you have vendors like that that don't say they don't understand? Is it like a couple strikes and you're out?
I would seriously question, like, if he was low bidder again, I would seriously question whether he was a responsible bidder. And if they were to establish a pattern, I'd say a couple of years ago, we had, Warehouse Direct bid on some copier paper for us. And it was a real go-around with us where they finally withdrew their bid. And I think they submitted a bid the following year. It may have been before you were on the board. I didn't accept their bid. When they called and questioned why, I worked through the process with the vice president that called me, and I told him, as far as I was concerned, they really weren't a responsible bidder. And, you know, after I walked through them and told them, you know, your representative made a commitment, submitted a bid, and then they withdrew it, and so forth, he really didn't have much else to say after that.
So we'll just keep an eye out.
Yeah. If this becomes an issue, then we kind of keep track of those vendors. It's a headache. They have to go back and rebid something after you've already been out to bid.
Typically, though, Life Touch, they've been in the business a long time. It's, I mean, they're not typically an unreliable bidder. But
no. They were, I guess they were with the district 8 or 10 years ago, because they knew the district. They knew Frank, Thomas Shevitz. He was aware of them, because Frank's been working on the yearbook for so many years. He did recall working with those folks a number of years ago. So, then that'll conclude that particular topic. The next topic then is the 2012 summer painting project. As you know, we have been rolling out the 21st Century Classroom concept. Last summer, we painted all of Lincoln, and we painted two classrooms in each of the elementary schools for a total of six classrooms, excluding Lincoln. We are now looking to move forward with the painting projects for the remaining elementary schools, meaning Churchill, Franklin, and Forest Glen. Our director of buildings and grounds estimates it was probably back around 1997-98 in that area when the buildings were last repainted. So we're talking 13, 14, 15 years. We'd like to move forward with this recommendation. We went out to bid. We sent bid packets to six vendors. We sent bid packets to a number of vendors. Six vendors actually participated in the process. As you can see, Bill's Painting is the low bidder at $180,800. $180,080. There were two other vendors, or one other vendor, I should say, that actually broke down the prices per building, which is what we requested. So you had Bill's Painting at $180,800. I've spoken with them. They have met our insurance requirements. They have met their bonding requirements. And we would like to move forward with this recommendation. It's a pretty tight time schedule. We've given them 2.5 to 3 weeks, probably 3 weeks, to paint each one of the buildings. Essentially, they have from about the first week of June till about the 10th to the 15th of August. So that's a pretty condensed time frame to paint all of those elementary buildings.
Our first interview day is the 16th of August. I just want to maybe back that up
a
little bit.
My plan was to have this done by about August 1st, August 5th, right in that area.
Okay.
So I'm trying to, every time I try to get a little more time, I get pushed back.
That's right.
So that's the plan. We would like to move forward with painting the elementary schools this year, and then probably the plan would move forward with painting Hadley the following year, in other words, the summer of 2013. So, grand plan, that's the scheme that we have for the next couple of years regarding painting projects for the buildings.
You remember who did that intervention?
Yeah, it was Bacone out of Ottawa, or one of the far western suburbs.
Yeah, that's the only bid on too.
Yeah, their bid came in at $158,000, not $150,000, and they only bid two of the buildings. The rest of them did not break out the total by building. They just gave us a total, and you can see they ran from $180,000 to $419,000. So we would like to take this to the board for discussion on April 23rd and action on May 14th. As I've said previously, this is a pretty condensed time frame. So we'd like to move forward with this as quickly as possible. Any questions, comments, concerns? Okay, the next order of business then this evening will be the 2012 furniture bid. As you know, we annually go out to bid for the next fiscal year's furniture needs. We have an aging obsolescence plan that's been developed over the years, and we use that as a guiding tool in terms of what's going to need to be replaced and what will be reprioritized for purchase in a later year. As you also know, we move forward with the 21st implementation of the 21st Century Classroom, which we began really last summer and into the fall. We have brought that group together on a number of occasions. We believe we have substantial support of that group of about 15, 18 people. And this year we would like to ramp up our program so that we will be rolling out the addition of 24 classrooms. Six at each of the elementary school buildings. On March 8th, we went out to bid. Those bids were returned on March 30th. Three packets were submitted by the vendors that are attached in your spreadsheet. I've also included what the typical elementary school classroom is going to look like in terms of their needs, student desk, teacher chairs, the Hokie rockers, beanbag chairs, and computer tables. Additionally, we had some minor requests from the building for file cabinets and things of that nature. And then finally, we have the final replacement of all student desks at Hadley. That's been achieved, I believe, over the past 4 years. So we have our final, I believe, around 8 classrooms of furniture left to replace for Hadley. That is all included in on your attached spreadsheet here. We're looking for the support of the Finance Committee this evening. For a total price of $229,841, we would be taking this to the board for discussion on April 23rd and in May 14th for action.
Well, the only thing I wanted to ask is for that meeting, if we could just see the totals broken out for 21st century versus everything else.
Sure. The only thing that really of any magnitude that you would not have there would be the 210 capital seats seating at the bottom of page 9. The seating well, I believe that's, yeah, that's a student desk and chair. Those are specifically for Hadley. That would be normal A&O. Almost everything else is 21st century, except for some miscellaneous file cabinets or things of that nature. Nothing of any substance.
But we can break it out.
Yeah, I was just trying to understand like what the cost per class was. Did you say how many?
24 classrooms.
Oh, you want to know that you want it broken down, not?
Well, I was just going to take the 21st century and then divide it by 24.
Okay. Okay, any other questions on that? Then the next item of business for business this evening is the food service POS point of service acquisition. I'll answer any questions you have to the best of my ability. Phyllis has been a point person on this project, so I always lean heavily on Phyllis for any technical support that we may need. As you know, we are moving towards full implementation of the National School Lunch Program. We are planning on rolling that out in our four elementary schools this summer. As part of that process, not a requirement to belong to the National School Lunch Program, but rather to help us assist in sort of the management of the National School Lunch Program. We're looking to purchase a point of service equipment. That would be the checkout system that we would use for the food service program at the four elementary schools. This would assist us in the streamlining of the free and reduced lunch program. It eliminates, or well, we would hope that it would eliminate overt identification of kids as they walk through the service line, and it would also provide a seamless communication between the Skyward system that we've implemented over the past few years with regards to the finance, human resources, and now the student data system. Phyllis also, at the request of our food service vendor, Mark Court, Sandy Voss is her name, the individual that's responsible for the program. She asked that we also take a look at mealtime, which Phyllis did. After a careful review, Phyllis made the determination that they would like to stick. We'd like to stick with the Skyward system, and that calls for cost of initial software cost of $27,643 versus the $21,903 for the mealtime purchase. Also, with both purchases, you're going to have ongoing annual cost to maintain those systems. For the year, for this current year, the system management cost will be $3,997 for additional cost and information. And then we expect that to go up at the rate of about 3.8% annually. Additionally, as you, well, you may not be aware, we also recently went out to bid for additional furniture, additional equipment that will be necessary, steam tables, holding racks, warming tables, and things of that nature for a complete rollout of the food service system. So that gives you an update in terms of where we're currently at with this rollout and implementation. We were looking for your support and be taking this to the board April 23rd for discussion and then May 14th for action. Do you have any questions regarding this this recommendation?
I just want to clarify too that this isn't just for free and reduced students, that the point of service is for all students. So the food service program is for all of our elementary students, and they'd be using ID cards that are swiped, and just like we do at Hadley, parents put money into an account and the kids just use the account when they...
This is a point of service system. It's just like checking out at a counter in at a restaurant or a grocery store or whatever the case may be. We need a system of being able to track our funds, so this would assist in that whole implementation.
So there's no way of leveraging off of more courses since they're providing the service to have them provide, you know, they provide some of the employees. I know we hire them. I didn't know if they have like extra licenses of their existing stuff that are delivered.
The problem, and they use mealtime. The problem is that mealtime does not sync rather seamlessly with our Skyward system. And when you're going to the parent portal where they're going to pay their fees and put money on their account, check their kids' attendance and check, you know, all this stuff, it's a single point of entry then for a parent also. It's not only from our purpose, but also from the parental side of it. There's no, right now, with we are currently using NutriKids at Hadley, and so there's human intervention involved in that to some degree, to get the files to sync up and to get the manual, the cash payments posted, things like that. Staying within the Skyward family of software, it's fairly seamless from the student's account side and also from posting it to our books. So we're picking up some efficiencies there in that respect. And so, yes, there's not a way to leverage their licenses because it's a completely different database. And they wouldn't cross it over. We'd have to buy mealtime just like we're buying, you know, because there isn't that district-wide, you know, common student database. I mean, even if there were, I'm not too sure that there would be any kind of a discount for that.
So there won't. So if we're not using the same, I guess there's no issues with us reconciling back to them eventually.
No, because the money is ours and the meals are ours. What right now with NutriKids, what they do is we run reports off of the NutriKids system, and that's what establishes the billing for the number of meals served. And then, you know, but that's still all of ours, our part of it. We give, it's kind of like we give them the information, and they have their production records to reconcile it back to. So we're reconciling it from both sides, and that will still happen with Skyward.
The other efficiency, just in terms of looking down the road a little bit, since we'll be doing another reorganization in FFO in another year, that this is a good move to create that efficiency in a little less man,
right,
man hours.
The,
or woman hours.
Why not have the, or why we leave it at the
board? Pardon me?
Why do we want to bring, have the on board at the same time?
For the same reason, because if you're the data import between the systems is not as seamless, and I still have to pay we still have to pay a support license to NutriKids. So we're bringing all of the schools under one umbrella.
I think that was your question.
And then
Hadley is coming under this umbrella.
Right.
Hadley
is coming. Well, I saw four schools on here.
Yeah.
Right. No, we're expanding. What is the impetus of this was the expansion of the additional four schools. All five will be in Skyward. I'm sorry. Oh. I apologize for the confusion. No, so we're, as of the end of this current support contract with NutriKids, which is the end of the school year, we will be doing away with that contract and be bringing all those records into the Skyward system. So it will be seamless kindergarten or first grade through eighth grade.
But I think we do need, we'll look at this recommendation because it does save the four elementary schools.
Right.
Okay.
So we'll clear that up, that language. I can see the confusion as it is now. Any other questions? So then the next order of business then this evening will be the final phase of the smart board rollout, and I'll let Mike present that.
And 2 years ago, we piloted 21 smart boards throughout the district. Spread them out evenly across the buildings, and first year through, pilot went well enough to where we felt it was time to move forward with full implementation of smart boards throughout the district. So last summer we did 75, which covered maybe a little bit better than half of the classrooms that we currently have. This year's proposal will be to complete that rollout, so this will be the final phase. And this would be another recommendation for another 75 boards. And that would cover enough boards to get all of the instructional spaces, like the larger instructional spaces, equipped with a smart board. We didn't include some of the smaller rooms or the meeting spaces, at least not initially. Sometimes those rooms are repurposed for a variety of reasons through the year. So, or through the years. So if there is a need for it, those are things that we can take on a case-by-case basis. But this was to focus on mainly the instructional classrooms. So this would be all five buildings would now have a substantial completion of the smart board rollout throughout the district. So when we went through this, we contacted the two vendors that we've done work with before, that have done work for us before, for installing the smart boards and projectors, and those were United Visual and Chicago Office Technology Group. And Chicago Office Technology Group had won the bid last year. And what I asked them for was to give me a price, a quote for the cost of a single room. What would it cost to do a single room for all the equipment, the board, the materials, and the installation. So then we can look at that single room and then extrapolate that out over 75 so we get our final cost. So I also wanted them to break out the materials and the hardware separate from the labor to install. Mainly because when we pay that amount out, we usually lease the equipment, whereas the installation and service end, I prefer to pay out in lump sum upon satisfactory completion of the work. So when we looked at the results from the bid, they were pretty similar to last year. These are the same vendors that competed for the business last year. United, the hardware for the boards is always going to be the same. We're part of a consortium, a buying group with DuPage County. It's called MAP-E is the pricing that we get, that the vendor has available to them through SMART. So both United Visual and Chicago Office Technology Group are members of that. They can take advantage of that pricing. So the board price is going to be the same. And really what it came down to is the cost for installation. And Chicago Office Technology Group was substantially cheaper for installation per room. And that broke out to the difference being $22,500 was the quote from United Visual, as opposed to $13,125 for from United Visual. So our recommendation is to move forward with United with
OCTG.
Pardon?
OCTG.
COTG. Chicago Office Technology.
A little reversal. Sorry.
Right, so we our recommendation is to move forward with Chicago Office Technology Group to do the installation and purchasing the equipment through them. We also recommend a five-year dollar buyout lease for the purchase of the equipment through American Capital. And we've done business with American Capital for several years now for a lease. And at the end of the 5 years, I would anticipate these boards to last the same, anywhere from 8 to 10 years total. So we would retain this equipment, we would keep this equipment until we find ourselves in a position where we need to replace it, which, as I said, should be about 8 to 10 years of life we should get out of this equipment. And then our annual costs for the lease will be $23,890.76. A lot of any of the leasing quotes that I'm getting right now from American Capital are estimates. The interest rate could fluctuate between now and the time we actually move forward, so it could go down, it could go up, but it gives us an estimate as to what that cost will be for the next 5 years.
So could it go up or down throughout the course of the lease?
No, it's a fixed cost once we lock into the lease, but at this point when I'm getting estimates, that's really all they are, they're just estimates. So if it does fluctuate by a few dollars up or down, that's because the interest rate is also fluctuating. Any questions, comments?
If the interest costs increase dramatically from what you're telling us, would you bring that back to us?
Sure. Yeah, so we definitely make you aware of that. If it was a significant change over the last couple of years, really 3 years. We haven't seen any significant change, but our leasing agent always forewarns me that that's always a possibility. There could be a change or fluctuation in that rate. So I just wanted to make you aware that that's always a possibility.
Actually, the last two leases we've had have yielded us a savings. And I think by the time we've gotten to our final approval, that price has changed and we've locked into a lower price.
Right. So we were fortunate in those last few couple of leases that we entered into.
For some reason, I thought we did everything last time. I guess I didn't realize we were only halfway through. The, one of the things that always troubles me a little bit about these is that we have the overhead projectors and stuff are, we roll all those out. Do we keep those in there? Do we sell those, or what do we do with those?
Well, most of the rooms are equipped just like what we have here. It's a mounted projector. In most cases, they're a little newer. They're a similar model to what we have in here. And we're not replacing those. That will be a separate refresh. Actually, we'll probably be due to refresh some of these within the next couple of years.
But you don't For some reason, wasn't there somewhere you buy a new projector with a smartphone?
You can. And the ones that I prefer right now are the short throw projectors, which mount to the wall. They extend out about, I don't know, maybe 3 feet. And you get a very short range for the image to hit the wall. So you don't run into issues where, like here, you see shadowing as you're passing in front of the projector. But since we already have the projectors pretty much done throughout the district, rather than redoing that whole project, we're just going to let those in place, and we're just continuing to utilize those until we get a point where we do need to replace
them. Using those on the smart boards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They stay in place.
I mean, you did include if there was any problem with projectors, that may be an additional cost.
As an additional cost, I did include that. And that's mostly in the event that we have to move a projector. Possibly it's pointing at a wall or an area in the room that's not conducive to putting a board. So we may have to have to move that projector from one end of the room to the other. And in some cases, we may even need to have a power mode. So in that event, COTG, or Chicago Office Technology Group, quoted us $175 per room if they needed to move that, whereas United Visual quoted us $75 per room. We anticipate there's about 8 to 10 rooms in the district after a walkthrough we did over the spring break that might require that, but I wouldn't see any more than that requiring that. And in most cases, it's just a matter of moving the projector. The power is already in place. Questions on smartphones?
Hearing none, then we'll move on to the next order of business this evening, the elementary school computer refresh. Mike?
And we are at that point in our cycle right now where we're replacing computers that are going to be in service. This is their sixth year. Next year will be their seventh. So usually we try to replace we usually put these on a 5-year lease. That lease that had expired a couple of years ago. The equipment is kind of hitting that point where it's not quite cutting it as we start to move forward with newer technology and higher expectations. So we're at a point now where we would normally refresh at the grade schools after we've done Hadley. So what this recommendation is for, and just to preface, I had met with a focus group comprised of elementary school teachers, teacher leaders, teachers that have been invested in technology over the last several years to talk about what their needs were and things that they wanted in their classrooms for technology and support. And a couple of the common themes we heard was flexibility, greater access, more equipment. And when I asked them, well, how many do you need in your room? How much would be enough to suffice? The consensus seemed to be as long as they had at least 5 devices in their room, they could be able to do pretty much a lot of the project-based learning that they've been working on already. So, When I looked at the entire, you know, basically I worked off floor plans when I was looking at each room, each instructional room, and I pulled the numbers from that. If I were to put 5 laptops in each one of these instructional rooms, what would my quantity be? And the quantity came to 550 laptops is what we'd be looking at, to put 5 laptops in each instructional space or have them available in each instructional space. So that's part of the recommendation, is that we're recommending 550 laptops that would be primarily for student use, for instructional use, that would be available in the classrooms. These are laptops very similar to what you have right here. They're a little bit smaller, a little bit lighter, but still very capable. They're not netbooks. The reason I decided for the laptops over the netbooks is the laptops are a little bit more, or they're a lot more capable than a netbook is. And at the elementary level, we still have a lot of locally installed programs that are kind of resource intensive that we would never usually use at Hadley, but we're still very much in use at the grade school. So I wanted to have equipment that was going to be capable of still running those traditional programs that we still use and have, but would still be light and flexible enough to be able to get them from room to room or collaborate and be able to pull these resources together. And this would be a good fit. It's also a very familiar platform. Most teachers have used laptops before, are familiar with how they work, know kind of what to expect. So at least that's kind of familiar territory for them as far as that learning curve to incorporate these into their lesson plan. The other thing we looked at were desktops. So similar to the model that we have at Hadley, almost identical to the model we have at Hadley, we put a desktop in every classroom. That desktop would be for the teacher's use, and it would also be connected to any of the presentation materials. So smart boards, the projectors, if they have a document camera in that room, speakers, pretty much anything the teacher's going to use for either presentations or for their own work would be available to them on that desktop. So we would still position a desktop in each classroom that would be for the teacher's use, but only that one desktop. The plan is not to clutter the rooms with desktops, but to free up that space, have more mobile technology, and get a little bit more space back in our classrooms. So that was 245 desktops is the number we came up with, and that also comprises conversations that I had with the Special Ed Department, Jen Law, Stacey Omack, and Katie McCluskey, for what their programs needed, what they need to move forward. And for the most part, the consensus there was 2 to 3 desktops in those rooms for ELL, special ed, bilingual, some of the special programs that we have that we've never really incorporated in with these refreshes in the past. I wanted to have them included as well. And they felt like if they had at least access to at least 2, if not 3 additional desktops in their rooms, especially for things like special ed, and you've got a lot more adaptive technology, a lot of things where you've got to plug in special monitors or keyboards or mice, desktops just tend to work a little bit better for that kind of equipment. So I also incorporated that into that count of 245. So that includes all of the classroom PCs, plus any additional PCs that would be purchased for some of the special programs. And special ed already has iPads that they've rolled out, and they're also incorporated into their curriculum. So it gives them a little bit more of a blend rather than just having the traditional desktop. So basically, what we're looking at is 245 desktops and 550 laptops, plus another 245 monitors for those desktops. And we contacted a couple different vendors, Heartland, formerly Victorin Business Solutions, and Tiger Direct, two vendors that we've done a lot of business with over the years, asked for an apples-to-apples comparison of these two models. And Tiger Direct came out a little bit less expensive than Heartland. So our recommendation is to purchase from Tiger Direct. For the desktops, we would purchase those on a 5-year lease. That'd be a dollar buyout. So at the end of the term of that lease, we'll hang on to those computers. And on the laptops, that would be a 3-year fair market value lease. So our intention with the laptops at the end of the term of the lease would be to give those back. So I'll give those back to the leasing company. Well, the desktops we will retain. So a lot of the desktops that we have currently, you have trouble there, Steve? You know?
I'm just looking at what ports are on.
But the existing desktops that we have in the grade schools right now, we're not just going to get rid of all of them. What we're going to do is we're going to repurpose those for a year. We'll relocate those into the labs, particularly the grade school labs and the labs at Hadley, to get another year of use out of those, because those will replace the really old computers that we still have in the labs. And we'll still get another use out of those machines. But you get them about 7 years, and you'd be pushing 8 years on those machines by the end of that term. But they're still more capable than the machines we currently have. So it'll plug a gap for us for a year, and then next year we'll look at refreshing the lab computers. Right now we're just looking at the classroom technology. But we'll take those existing desktops in the classrooms and the grade schools, we'll incorporate those into the labs, even the libraries where they may need some additional equipment. So we'll still get another year's worth of use. I would anticipate the equipment that we've got coming in here now, we would do the same thing after the 5 years that is up with that lease, or when we look to refresh it. It's a resource we can still get maybe another year or two worth of use out of, just as we're doing with the equipment right now that we're refreshing. So that was the plan with that equipment as far as implementation goes. The additional costs that will go along with this is we anticipate needing about 27 storage carts, and the storage carts are to store, house them, secure them, but also to charge them over the course of the evening. So it's a place for us to put it. So it would be about 27 of those that we would need. Those I would purchase just outright and buy those straight up. That's another resource that I could see us using easily another 10 years. And these are really nicely constructed, very sturdy carts. We've been getting this model for the last couple of years. We've been very happy with them after some, pretty big disappointments like the one behind you. Once we found one that worked and that held up under the stress, we kind of like to stay with that model. So this is the model that we've recommended to store and house these laptops as well. Any questions?
So the computers you're keeping for a year are owned already. There's no cost to the district. Not another year lease to somebody.
No, we've owned them for a couple of years now.
Okay. Why buy any more desktops? I can't see any device that doesn't plug into a USB port.
True.
What special interface do you need on a desktop?
It's not as much about the interface as it is about, it's a piece of equipment that's assigned to that room. So if I didn't get a desktop, what would I get? Would I get a laptop?
You just get all laptops. You can swap them out. You got all the same computers. If you need to plug a monitor into the laptop, you do that. It's got a keyboard. It's got speakers built in. It doesn't use as much power. Doesn't have fans that break down as much. I mean, obviously fans do break down, but
true.
Takes up space. I mean, I don't know how big the small form factors are. They exactly the same.
They're about the same. It's about the same size, same footprint you're going to take up on the desk. And the reason that we kind of stayed with the desktop model is that's what we went with at Hadley.
Right.
And the main benefit to having the laptop is the mobility of the laptop, is to be able to move that laptop around and use it during the course of the day. In situations like this, there's really not much need for that mobility, but as well as most teachers would want to have that docked. They're not going to want to plug all of that equipment back in.
Right.
So we'd have to invest in a docking station. Those are another $125, even if we just did the dock, just to plug it in. But traditionally, if you're going to put a docking station in, you'd also include a mouse and keyboard, and you may as well throw a monitor on there as well, so it turns it into a full workstation, but you still have the mobility. So what happens then is it escalates our cost, because now we've got all these peripherals to invest in. And we're not really getting any additional benefits out of having the mobile technology, since most teachers, especially at the grade school level, are in that room, 90% of the day. So there's really nowhere to go. And even for use at home, most all the services that we have that are available to them here are available to them from home. So if they wanted to get to their grade book, there's a web portal to Pinnacle. If they want to get to their remote access to get to their personal drives, they can do that from home. If they want to get their email, they can do that from home. If they want to try to check their financial information, they can do that from home. So pretty much most anything they could do here, we've made available through the web for them at home. So I just wasn't seeing the big upside to going with the laptops. And when I looked at that against the additional cost, I just thought the desktop was a better fit. Not to mention the laptop's probably only going to give you 3, maybe 4 good years. These desktops, we're going to get 8 good years. And we won't have to replace them after that 3rd year or 4th year. We'll still be able to get some good use out of those for several more years afterwards. So that's pretty much why I decided to go with the desktop as opposed to the laptop. And our plan, as it was at Hadley, was to make a cart of laptops available for teachers. So if they did have a need for project work, or they were traveling, or they wanted to have more mobility in the building, they still have that option on the checkout basis from the library. So they still have the mobile option in the laptop, but the district wouldn't incur all the liability of having so many laptops floating around, not to mention damage, theft, loss of anything that you can move out of the room. So that's pretty much why we decided with the desktop model.
Yeah, people don't really buy desktops unless they're swapping graphics cards and stuff. Or, I mean, do they make it all in one with the monitor and everything together? It's like a keyboard and mouse.
HP, most vendors do. I'm a little leery of going with all-in-ones only because occasionally if something dies, then it's dead. If that monitor dies on you, that whole workstation could be dead. If I did want to upgrade my graphics card, if I did want to upgrade my audio card, you can't do it. So my concern with the all-in-one units is if one thing breaks on it, it could mean that whole device is gone. Or with the desktops, another thing is I did not go with the extended warranty on the desktops, because usually if something breaks on a desktop, it's something like a hard drive.
Right.
That's something we can replace here. That's something with the new tech model, we'll take care of that kind of service. We're not going to pay for extended warranties to do the kind of work we can do here for a lot less money.
Yeah, can we get the exact specs for these?
Sure.
Like what?
I can give you the exact specs.
Yeah.
The laptops were at i3 with 4 gig.
i3 second gen.
Yeah, and then the others were i5s with 4 gig. Pretty standard. I mean, there's nothing exotic in the specs here. You know, that's another reason that when we look at some of the vendors, we're looking at some more consumer level brands also to help kind of cover.
And HP said they want to get out of the PC business too.
Yeah, they took that back about a day later.
Okay.
What's their shareholders got a hold of that?
Lenovo or others who want to be in the business. Okay.
Yeah, I mean the hardware vendors are starting to dwindle because it is such a commodity.
Right, it
They're
is.
Starting to
so,
see that.
But it looks like you have 6440Ps here, but you've chosen 6360s.
Just because the models have changed so rapidly, you can't get that model anymore. So,
all right. It looks like some of these have cameras and some don't.
Yeah, I mean, here we've got kind of a blend, a mix of some different models or different specs, but these would all be spec with cameras in them. And HP already, they assured me that the model that they're quoting me will be available in May and June, because there have been times when
right.
they quote me a model and yeah. three months later they get rid of that model.
Yeah.
Well, on average, what do we have today in our classrooms, laptops?
In the grade schools, the standard model, which we've had for the last 10 years now, has been, it's three desktops when you're looking at the kindergarten to third grades. So each one of those have three desktops. One's for the teacher use, the other two for student. Fourth grade has four, and fifth grade has five. And that's been a pretty static number for the last 10 years. And part of this plan is to kind of break out of that a little more and get more equipment accessible to students in the classroom. With this model, they can pull their resources together, so you can have a one-to-one in the classroom, or you can divide them up as they see fit throughout the building. So we'll elevate our level of our quantity of equipment while still keeping it very mobile and not taking up a whole lot of space in the classrooms, which the desktops definitely do.
I guess, one of the things I'm looking at is with the laptop, you have the more mobile technology. I guess I'm wondering why you wouldn't want to do the cart model, because, you know, the other laptops, what percentage of the day are they actually getting used? It just seems like to be honest, a fairly big investment to have those sitting on.
Well, what we did at Hadley, and what I'm going to suggest we do at the grade schools, is we took a cart of 10, actually it's a cart of 20 notebooks. In this case, it'd be a cart of 10 laptops. And we made that available to a curricular area. So in this case, it might be the first grade teachers would have access to, say, three carts of laptops. And then they decide how they want to use them and how they want to rotate, who wants to use how many. And that model has actually worked pretty nicely to have it. Teachers kind of have worked around each other's schedules or had come to an agreement how they wanted to share them out, how they were going to schedule and plan to use them, and that's worked. And that's something that I would suggest that the grade schools do as well. So you don't have five or six laptops sitting in a classroom collecting dust. That other teachers in that same content area or that same grade level would also have access to be able to share them and pool those resources together. So again, with the mobile technology, it's not like the desktops where the teacher wasn't going to use it. Basically, it's just going to sit there. With these, you have the option to be able to pull those out and use those in other ways, in other classrooms as well. Of course, the expectation is that all of our teachers are going to use them, of course.
I assume these all come with a license for Windows?
Yes, actually, we're restructuring our licensing agreement through the Microsoft Volume Licensing, and we just re-upped our license for not just Office, but also for the operating system, because Windows 7 does not handle the way we distribute the image anymore, the way it used to, the way it handles the licensing. So it kind of forced us to have to upgrade our licensing structure there.
But are you going to run Windows 7? On these
not initially. We talked about doing it this year, mainly because you can't find drivers for these anymore for XP.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of your support issues probably are due to XP too. I mean, Windows 7 has been out a number of years. It's just a much better OS.
Which one, 7 or XP?
7.
Yeah, XP. Well, actually, we'll run into more issues with 7 because of the legacy software that we're using. We've got a lot of old software that we use at the grade schools, and also the tech department's learning curve of catching up with all of the things, all of the nuances that go into upgrading from Windows XP to Windows 7, particularly how we handle our profiles, how it handles email, how it handles personal storage, how it handles deployment, are all very different than how we manage those with XP. So the way we looked at it, we'll probably have fewer support issues going forward into this fall if we just stayed with XP for one more year. But we're still ready to move to 7. We'll have all of our machines in this district will be capable of running
Windows 7. Windows 8 is coming out later this year.
Yeah, I know.
Doesn't Windows 7 have built in? You can run a program as a legacy operating system?
You can.
Well, it runs 32-bit mode, all of those. And you can run a virtual XP machine if you want to and set it up. That's probably more complicated.
Or you can just put XP on it and be done with it. So, we can virtualize them and we can do all of that, but that layers more support issues on top of the tech department rather than just loading it with that native operating system and then addressing these other concerns that I know are going to pop up this coming year. We're just not quite in a position right now to
Okay. 21st century. I mean, Windows XP, really, when was it introduced? 99?
Well, no, it was 99-2000.
Yeah.
I didn't give it up until a couple months ago, but now I
don't know. Yeah, 64-bit OS.
Yeah, I've been working with 7 here for the last couple of years.
You got iOS running on all these iPads. I mean,
right.
You're hiring two new tech people that hopefully have worked in a Windows 7 enterprise environment.
We also have to
interview them.
We also have to look at what the learning curve is for our staff, too.
Right.
So that there's going to be a learning curve that goes
along. I have most of the Windows 7 machines at home. And they bought laptops because nobody buys desktops anymore.
Right. Well, but there's a learning curve because it's a little different here than how you're going to see it at home.
I understand it.
And all of these things do present huge changes to our staff. I mean, what's hard for you to probably grasp is that, our teachers, we switched to Windows 7 here last summer. I mean, even that was a big change for this small group of people. So you've been hearing a lot about the teachers and their struggles with technology. So this...
Okay. We're trying to mitigate just a little.
Yeah.
Just hold on. I mean, the biggest struggle was the Microsoft Word programs, Excel, and Word. I had to relearn all this. So you should hold on to
the office upgrade, we're going to move to 2010 this year. We're at 2007 now. 7 and 10 are very similar. The jump from 2003 to 2007, that was a jump.
Went from 3 to 10.
Yeah, that's a very big jump. Our teachers, I think, are now familiar with the new ribbon layout and how that's formatted. So that move to 10, yeah, it shouldn't be quite as impactful.
It just seems you're doing more work to put XP on, just to put Windows 7 on eventually.
Well,
you might hold sometime you get a bunch of machines.
That's
kind of with Windows 7.
It's kind of how the licensing works.
Yeah.
The licensing works where you have that initial operating system on it, and then you lay over the upgrade, which would be Windows 7. So either way, we've got to jump through those licensing groups for Microsoft. So
Microsoft doesn't want people deploying with XP anymore. They want to.
Well, deploying with XP is a lot easier than it is with 7, and that's why they don't want you to.
I thought XP was finally getting support dropped.
It is next year.
They must have moved it out.
Well, and we were all ready to go to Windows 7, but when we found that we could get XP drivers for this equipment, we decided to stay with XP for one more year because I thought they were just going to force us to do it. But given the learning curve that the tech department and myself would have to go through to get that deployment piece in, and then the PD that would also be involved at the building level. Seemed like an awful lot to put in to one summer's worth of work. So we felt that leaving that for one more year, I think the teachers will get just as big a benefit out of the new equipment running Windows XP as they will work running Windows 7. I think we did so. Any other questions on that?
And we'll move to our next order of business then, is the iPad rollout for exploratory and elementary schools. Mike?
Okay, and the iPad rollout, and this kind of covers several different areas, so I kind of want to tie this together even with the computer rollout we just talked about. I received a couple different recommendations or proposals from different groups of staff over the last this last school year. First group I had met with were the PE teachers, the elementary PE teachers, and last year, we piloted some tablets that have for their PE program. And they've been using them all year for things like getting attendance or getting on the internet, checking their, they've got a lot of video presentations that they show to the class using the tablet. And it seemed to be a nice fit for them, being PE is a very mobile kind of class. So the PE teachers in the grade schools were also interested in also having a tablet available. So this proposal includes the iPads for our PE program as well. So each PE department would get at least one iPad that they would use for attendance, for apps that they've already identified for instruction as well as assessment. They've been piloting these all year, so they've already developed some ideas and some things that they want to do with it for next year. So I wanted to include them in this proposal. The next one that I had received was from the music department at Hadley, and they were interested in a collection of iPads as well. And I think today we're going to see the Smart Music program. I think you can access that with the iPads, but they also have a couple of other applications that they've been using and want to continue to use for iPads that support the music program. And what they decided was 15 would be sufficient, and those iPads would be shared amongst all the music programs. So they'd have an opportunity to all use those, and the kids would all get a benefit from that for the music program. The other request I had gotten from Hadley were from the exploratories, particularly the ones down in the lower level, Applied Tech, Art Tech, the Art Class, Health, and the Life Skills Class. And they also asked for a cart of 15 iPads that they could use and they could share amongst the exploratories in the lower level for different projects that they've already planned. The other piece of this is when we were looking at the grade schools and the refresh there, we kind of took care of the desktop and the laptop and the mobile technology for that, but we didn't really introduce anything new into that environment. And when we looked at the iPads that we have in the libraries already for checkout, the checkout makes it a little bit more limiting, a little bit less access for everyone to have the ability or the chance to use them. So what I wanted to do was also include a cart of 10 iPads that could be available at each grade level. So from kindergarten through fifth grade, each grade level would have a cart of 10 iPads available to them. We already have 40 in each one of our grade schools. So we've got 30 that we purchased last year for the pilot, and we also have 10 that are in the 21st century classrooms. So we would pull those out, collect those, and we have 40. So that gives us 4 for kindergarten through third grade. But we'd be short 2 extra carts. So this proposal also includes 20 additional iPads that would be stationed in each building. Each building would get another 20, and that would give them a full cart of 10 for each grade level, kindergarten through fifth, that they would share amongst those groups. We were also going to take the netbooks that were purchased last year to support the TCI program for social studies and bring those into the lab to fill up that void left with taking the iPads out. So then they would have those netbooks available to use in the library or to use for checkout as they see fit. So that would kind of round out the refresh at the grade schools, which would give us a blend of desktop, laptop, and tablet technology that they'd have available at each grade level for each classroom. And that brings us to a total of 120 iPads total, which I think, at least for now, should get us pretty set on iPads for a little while, in addition to what we already have in the buildings. So it's kind of how that all ties in together, how that plan would move forward for the grade schools. And that was it. Any questions on the iPads?
Are there any applications that need the iPad 3s with better resolution?
I don't think we've identified any that specifically.
Wanting to say, I want the cart of iPad 3s.
Yeah, I don't think there's any that specifically require it, which is nice if you have the iPad. Right now, none of these projectors are HD, so we wouldn't get the full benefit of that presentation.
They're saying some of the magazines that weren't done in HD looked terrible when they first rolled out on the higher resolution. They were all pixelated.
Right. Right. But the iPad 3s are what we would get.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Right.
Because the iPad 6 will be done in June, so.
I just had a couple questions.
Do we really want to pull the technology out of the 21st century classrooms? You know, because we're going to be showcasing some of those here. And so that's just one question.
Well, we're not going to remove them right now. That will be next year. Everything will remain for this year. But this rollout will kind of mirror what they have right now in the 21st century classrooms. Because right now they've got, I think it's 5 netbooks, or it's 4 netbooks and 5 iPads. So this will kind of mirror what those 21st century teachers are already using, and they would still have access to next year as well with the rest of them. So, my plan wasn't to isolate those individual rooms to have special equipment, but that now that we are kind of moving forward with this refresh, everyone would have access to the same kind of technology, which they all would with this proposal.
Part of the reason we had the technology in those classrooms this year configured the way we did was anticipation of what would be the kind of setup we'd want throughout the building in terms of access, and working towards that one-to-one access for students at any given time during the day. So by pulling them out and making that grade level have access to those same things, we're not isolating the opportunity just to a particular group of classrooms in the district. So that would be our goal anyway, is to pull, to expand that and make it accessible to everybody. So I think in terms of this year, when we're showcasing, what we're trying to showcase is this is what we would hope to see in terms of some of our most fundamental changes in a 21st century classroom. Flexibility of your furniture, adaptability for different modes for learning, and then technology that's both mobile and diverse. You can set up, Jim, if you like.
I just was wondering, for the PE ones, mm-hmm. people want to get some hardening cases. I know for the iPhone they have, so that's...
Brent... over at Churchill has been playing with the, Mike got him an iPad, and he also has a tablet.
He's got a Galaxy. He tried out the Samsung Galaxy.
And I think on both of them, the Galaxy's got a really hard shell cover, and I think his iPad also has a hard, it's not like...
It wasn't a Gorilla Glass.
That had gotten one. They're a little bit expensive, but they are nice, and they are sturdy. And for the 10 that would be used in the PE department, I'm not sure I can look at
Right, and I think he also had something that helped with the glare when he was outside.
Yeah, he has a glare gun.
Yeah, but I have to tell you that, just as an example, I work with the PE people on SIP days, and he was demonstrating this assessment app that he's using with the iPad. That is, it's so great because he can...
A wellness assessment?
No, it's an assessment of performance, student performance.
Okay.
So let's say they're assessing skipping, and they've already set up the students for how they should be skipping and what the proper mm-hmm. form is, and he can he can capture a student in the moment, and then the app can bring down and highlight your foot or your, how you're, it's just...
They can't let strap them on their back and use the accelerometer to measure the...
They probably do.
That's what Sam Sekovic was using at Hamlet.
Yeah, it's just, it's a great assessment.
It's an instant replay where you can see what the student was doing, let them self-assess, and we also use a program called FitnessGram for mm-hmm. grade schools, and they have a mobile app for that as well, so we can take advantage of that. On the iPads too, and that's another assessment program.
I'm really thrilled to see that our exploratory and our music and our PE teachers are finding really great applications to use the technology in their classroom.
And they're excited about using it.
They are.
Mm-hmm. And then the only other question was, you kind of touched on it a little bit, was the smart music software, just making sure, looking in to see that it basically.
Yeah, we can follow up.
We can ask Jim right now.
What's that?
Will the smart music, does that app, does that interface with iPad, your iPad?
Not yet, but they are working on that right now. Part of the main problem is copyright. So they haven't figured out how to deal with the copyright. Because every time a student opens a song, it's like a quarter of a penny or something, it goes to the publisher. And they haven't figured that out with iPad yet. So I'm sure it's going to happen. It's just maybe we're a year or two ahead of that or something, you know. But they're talking about it. And every time we go to a meeting, the same question comes up. When are they going to have that ready? And they don't, we're working on it. That's all they say.
Questions on that? Okay, then, the final item on this evening's agenda, that is the Finance Advisory Committee. Annie Ann, I'll put that in your hands.
I know in our minutes it said that next week I would bring copies of, or bring some names to. I felt a little uncomfortable doing that in a recorded meeting where we haven't maybe made contact with people or talk to them about it. So I'd rather talk with you about ideas for people and participants rather than actual names, and then suggest to you that I can exchange name ideas with you as well. Oh, God. Exchange name ideas with you, or you can, you know, provide me names. So what I did instead was talk a little bit here about structure and charge. And so thinking that the structure of the committee should probably be about 6 to 8 people, and you may have comments on that, but once you get too much larger than 8 people, if you want them to be a working group, it might get a little cumbersome. And as I've thought through the membership of an advisory committee, that it really should be a diverse group, not a singular group. I know we talked about financial expertise, but I think it's also important to have parental expertise and parental vision, as well as business person or two. And I wondered, and these are, you know, some of these were wonderings as much as definitives. One would be a senior citizen perspective in terms of our having students, you know, any longer in our system, as well as should we try to find someone who has a financial background in governmental, you know, financing, particularly in the state of Illinois. Whether it's from a retired school person or someone from municipal or someone who understands what it means to finance an organization differently than a business. So, though, and then whether or not you want a board member on there, one of you, I would think it would be a representative of the Finance Committee, whether it's the chair of the Finance Committee or another board member, along with my supposition would be Bob, you know, would be the kind of the facilitator of that committee. In terms of a charge, that there are a twofold purpose to the group. I am thinking at this point, and obviously open to your ideas, two purposes. One is to serve as ambassadors in the community to better understand who we are and how we finance our school system and what long-term planning means for us, and to provide a lens of expertise and recommendation, provide their insights that can come back to us and help influence the work that you're doing over the course of long-range planning. So that's my thought in terms of the big picture. So the first year, starting this summer, we might meet with the group and do just kind of education. What does it mean to be a school district financing yourself? What are the challenges? What does our long-range financial plan look like? What do our projections look like? And then in the fall, really begin to look at deepening that knowledge and making recommendations and finding ways in which they can serve as ambassadors to the rest of the community. And then thereafter, it might be a group that remains with those two primary charges and meets quarterly to stay abreast of the challenges. It might be a group, actually, who serves, you know, as a legislative watchdog as well, given some of the uncertainties of the state or federal, you know. So, and I think there are other charges that could come about or evolve based on the membership and based on the interests of that group, but primarily for them to serve as an eye to our financial future, with an objective and diverse perspective, as well as take their knowledge and their expertise out to be able to communicate to others in the community what we're doing. So that's just kind of a boilerplate, not really a boilerplate, but a template for you to respond to and provide some insights. And then I have, in my own little brain, have, which is talk about diverse, you know, just this, thought about maybe some names of people that might be good, but I'm going to need help, you know, in terms of names that you might have and know of people as well.
Yes, I didn't realize. I just saw, I've seen that the Park District have a financial advisory committee.
Mm-hmm.
And the village started theirs.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's active right now, but yes, they had a financial advisory who put that kind of that report together. I'm not aware of the Park District's finance advisory.
So you say it would just meet twice to get started, or
twice this summer?
Twice a year?
No, I think quarterly, at least, you know, four times a year. I think maybe more than that, and you'd have a hard time getting a commitment. But I think if we could bring a group together over the summer to build that knowledge, you know, kind of the study group approach during the summer, and then in the fall begin to really unfold the charge of the group. And the group could decide to meet more.
I think that's reasonable.
You want to be careful of people's time. I know the last time, well, I guess that was the Master of Facilities, wasn't it? Oh, we're only going to meet eight times.
Well,
oh, maybe 12.
Bullying, really.
Oh, bullying might have gone longer, too, yeah. So I'm cautious. I have to be careful of my own commitments to groups of people. And sometimes people do want to meet because you get involved. And you say, well, let's meet again, you know. But I think that should be up to the committee and to make that decision. And
yeah, that's fine. I don't know if she has many recommendations as helping to educate people so that more community members understand. I mean,
well,
I don't think we're doing anything wrong.
Right.
You have special. I don't know how it usually works. You get another retired
school business
administrator in to analyze what you're doing. You could hire a consulting firm to do that too.
Yeah.
Because it's free, but.
I think it's to offer perspective,
yeah.
You know, and broaden our own lens. That's one reason why I think having a diverse group, not just a financially, you know, financial background group, because obviously we're going to tie this to our educational priorities. And so you want people who also have an interest in understanding what you're trying to achieve educationally, and not just from a dollars and cents perspective, which is why I think the more diverse group. And, you know, we've been talking for a long time about how we might more meaningfully involve our senior citizens, and want this to be a, you know, a very small representation of that population. So I don't know. Any other ideas about it, or ideas that you think they should be working on, or how many people? Steve, you mentioned maybe not a recommending body, but just a reporting body.
They're just kind of analyzing what we're doing. It's not like we have a defined task. We're looking for a recommendation.
Right. Unless that occurred.
Right. Unless
know.
That occurred, I think it's good to get people involved who don't want to run in an election, you know, but then
right.
start to kind of understand what it's about. And, you know, we do need some people that understand what the job entails
mm-hmm.
and may be interested in the future in running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see that, I think that's a
mm-hmm.
a little less committal, you know, a little less commitment to kind of learn about things, and they can, you know, not have the as much apprehension on.
So not really a training ground, but could have that benefit.
So that could be one benefit. I just, right now, I just don't, we don't have a committee that we're saying, we need you to figure this out or help us give a community perspective on.
No. I do think it's really about ambassadorship, building greater knowledge around how the district operates with its finances and being able to have more educated voices out there in the community.
Yeah, I mean, that touches on the communication piece, more engagement, mm-hmm. that I have an interest in.
I pretty much agree with everything you're saying. I'm not adverse to a very diverse group. I think because it's a financial advisory committee, I think to have some orientation on the financial
piece. They have an interest in the subject.
They have to have an interest in the subject matter. Right. And you know, I some of the parents that I've worked with, who might be, you know, at this time stay-at-home parents, also have financial background.
Sure.
And you know, tremendous interest, but they would also bring that current parental perspective.
Right.
That I think could be really.
I think that's fine. I think it needs to be, you know, in the context of having some financial background to be able to bring something to the group.
I agree. And an interest in that kind of work, as opposed to someone who might be more interested in, you know, our fine arts program.
Right.
So are you comfortable with 6 to 8 members?
Yes.
Does that feel,
yes.
that feel right to you? Okay. So if you have names of people that you think would be good choices, if you'll send them to me, that would be great. I think, you know, we could also do an invitation as we've done for previous engagement. The problem I think we might encounter with an invitation is that because it's going to be a small group, you invite and you have 25 people, or, you know, as we did with the bullying task force, we had over 50. We wanted to have just 20. We decided to engage them all. I mean, we thought that was the right thing. In this case, we would not be doing that. We would be then selecting, and I don't know if that has an adverse effect when people have, you know, expressed interest in something. So that's the downside of not just getting a bunch of names.
Do we have a policy on how we select them?
We do not. I have gone. I have
by the whole board.
I have. I have. I've used the very scientific process of drawing names out of a hat for some committees. So
we won't be needing Francis to tell us how to do this.
No, I don't think.
Okay,
so.
Good.
No, but I think what we could do is we could, you know, maybe do an exchange of names and then. Find a way to make that selection and then make invitations. Does that sound? Okay. Well, then if you will send me some names, then we could proceed again at our next meeting. If not our next, if I don't get enough names from you by our next meeting, then it will have to be May. And we'll continue to look and expand our kind of questions out into the community and put our feelers out there too. As I said, I have probably 4 names of ideas, but that's, you know, again, from my world. Okay, that's it for me, Bob.
So we moved a little quicker than I had anticipated.
That's
we
great.
Covered a lot of ground this evening, and I thank you for that. Anything else you'd like to just engage in that conversation? We have a few minutes left, or we can break and reconvene at 7:30.
Okay, we'll try to slow down next time.
Okay, very good. That's it then for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.